Chapter 5. Beneath the surface, the shockwave traveled through the incompressible water at roughly 6,500 kilometers per hour in an expanding circle, crushing all sea life in its path. Old Gert was saved from instant destruction by the canyon walls. They towered above the submersible, shielding it from the main force of the explosive pressure. Yet the submersible was still whirled about violently. One moment it was level, the next it was tumbled end over end like a kicked football by the turbulence. The pod containing the main batteries and propulsion systems struck the rock-like nodules, cracked and collapsed inward from the tremendous pressure. Fortunately, the hatch covers on each end of the connecting tube held, or the water would have burst into the crew's sphere like a pile driver and mashed them into bloody paste. The noise of the explosion came over the underwater telephone like a thunderclap, almost in unison with the express train rumble from the shockwave. With their passing, the deep returned to a beguiling silence. Then the calm was broken again by the screech and groan of tortured metal as the ravaged surface ships fell through the deep, buckling and compressing before plunging against the seafloor in great mushroom clouds of silt. "What is it?" Stacy cried, clutching her chair to keep from being thrown about. Whether from shock or radical devotion to his work, Salazar's eyes had never left his console. "This is no earthquake. It reads as a surface disturbance." With the thrusters gone, Plunkett lost all control of old Gert. He could only sit there in helpless detachment as the sub was tossed across the field of manganese nodules. Automatically, he shouted into the underwater telephone, skipping all call sign formalities. "Jimmy, we're caught in unexplained turbulence. I've lost our thruster pod. Please respond." Jimmy Knox could not hear. He was fighting to stay alive in the waves far above. Plunkett was still trying desperately to raise the Invincible when the submersible finally ended her erratic flight and struck the bottom at a 40-degree angle, coming to rest on the sphere surrounding the electrical and oxygen equipment. "This is the end," Salazar murmured, not really knowing what he meant, his mind mired in shock and confusion. "The hell it is," snapped Plunkett. "We can still drop ballast weights and make it to the top." He knew as he spoke that releasing all the iron ballast weights might not overcome the added weight of the water within the shattered pod, plus the suction from the muck. He activated the switches, and hundreds of pounds of dead weight dropped free from the submersible's underbelly. For a few moments nothing happened. Then, centimeter by centimeter, old Gert pulled herself up from the bottom, rising slowly as if pushed by the hushed breaths and pounding hearts of the three people inside her main sphere. 10 feet up, announced Plunkett after what seemed an hour, but in reality was only 30 seconds. Old Gert leveled out and they all dared to breathe again. Plunkett futilely kept trying to contact Jimmy Knox. "Jimmy, this is Plunkett. Talk to me." Stacy stared so hard at the depth meter she thought the glass over the dial would crack. "Go, go," she pleaded. Then their worst nightmare burst on them without warning. The sphere holding the electrical and oxygen equipment suddenly imploded. Weakened by its impact into the seafloor, it gave up its integrity and was crushed like an egg by the merciless pressure. "Bloody hell," Plunkett gasped as the sub dropped back into the silt with a jarring bump. As if to drive home the terrifying reverse, the lights blinked out and snapped the sphere into a world of pure ebony. The malignancy of the Stygian blackness is a horror only the totally blind experience. To those with sight, the sudden disorientation curses the mind into believing unspeakable forces are approaching from beyond in an ever-tightening circle. At last, Salazar's hoarse voice broke the silence. "Mother of Jesus, we are finished for good." "Not yet," said Plunkett. "We can still make it to the surface by jettisoning the control sphere." His hand groped over his console until his fingers touched a particular switch. With an audible click, the auxiliary lights came on and relit the interior of the sphere. Stacy sighed with relief and briefly relaxed. "Thank heaven, at least we can see." Plunkett programmed the computer for an emergency ascent. Then he set the release mechanism and turned to Stacy and Salazar. "Hold tight, it may be a rough trip topside." "Anything to get the hell out of here," grunted Salazar. "Whenever you're ready," Stacy said gamely. Plunkett removed the safety peg from the release handle, took a firm grip, and pulled. Nothing happened. 3 times Plunkett feverishly ran through the routine. But the control sphere stubbornly refused to detach from the main section of the sub. In desperation, he turned to the computer to troubleshoot the cause of the malfunction. An answer came back in the blink of an eye. The release mechanism had been twisted and jammed by the angled impact with the seabed, and there was no way to repair it. "I'm sorry," Plunkett said in frustration, "but it looks like we stay until rescued." "Not chance of that," snapped Salazar, wiping the sweat that poured from his face with the sleeve of a down ski jacket. "How do we stand on oxygen?" asked Stacy. "Our main supply was cut off when the pod imploded," replied Plunkett. "But our emergency canisters in this unit and the lithium hydroxide scrubber to remove our exhaled carbon dioxide should keep us sucking air for 10 to 12 hours. Salazar shook his head and gave a defeated shrug. "Every prayer in every church of the world won't save us in time. It'll take a minimum of 72 hours to get another submersible on site, and even then it's doubtful they could lift us to the surface." Stacy looked into Plunkett's eyes for some small sign of encouragement, but she found none. He wore a remote and distant look. She got the impression he was saddened more by the loss of his precious submersible than he was at the prospect of dying. He came back on track as he became aware of her stare. "Raoul is right," he said tautly. "I hate to admit it, but we'll need a miracle to see the sun again." "But the Invincible," said Stacy, "they'll move heaven and earth to reach us." Plunkett shook his head. "Something tragic happened up there. The last sound we heard was a ship breaking up on her way to the bottom."
"But there were two other ships in sight when we left the surface," Stacy protested. "It might have been either one of them."
"It makes no difference," Plunkett said wearily. "There is no way up, and time has become an enemy we cannot defeat." A deep despair settled in the control sphere. Any hope of rescue was a fantasy. The only certainty was a future salvage project to retrieve old Gert and their bodies long after they were dead.